9th of September 2011. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Hereward Fenton, and we're warming up for the 9/11 anniversary coming up in 2 days' time. Tonight's show is going to be mainly concerned with that topic, and most of it is going to be rather unpleasant information we have to share with you. Unpleasant in the sense that it's going to sort of be tacky, lamestream media anecdotes that you've heard before, but we've got to keep talking about it because that's what's in front of us right now. You know, I'm looking forward to the time we can look back on this and have a good laugh. Have a good laugh at how lame the lamestream media was. Josh, what do you say to that?
Look, you know, the funny thing about it all is I actually, you know, as a day job, I have to work for some of these lamestream media platforms to get a bit of coin. And it really saddens me because I talk to people inside and a lot of them agree with me, but a lot of them, they just don't care about any of it. They're like, 9/11, whatever. Oh, like I'm talking to them, you can see them just blanking out like, ooh.
Yeah, they blank out really quick, don't they? They have a little spark of interest at the beginning, and then after about 5 minutes, they just go blank.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. I think, you know, and if you bring up, you know, the next rugby game, their ears will spark up.
Yeah, they spark up again.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, the Tigers, they beat St. George or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, something else I've noticed on the subject of 9/11 is that the ones who have an opinion generally actually know nothing at all. By that I really mean they know nothing. And they're the ones that actually tend to have an opinion, a strong opinion. Mm. But that's the nature of this subject. See, once you start to actually investigate, your strong opinion about, say, conspiracy theories being wrong starts to dissolve so quickly that the reason why these people have a strong opinion about it is because they've never even done one tiny little bit of looking at information.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And when these radio stations interview, like, someone, they'll get this person, they'll pluck them out of nowhere, and they'll interview them for half an hour. They know nothing. They make the whole rest of us sound totally ridiculous. And then they'll grab someone like yourself who has literally is a scholar on 9/11.
Why, thank you, sir.
Because, you know, you've studied it day in, day out, and same with John Bursell.
Yes.
It's you know, you've really taken time to study every aspect of any new information coming out, and not just the conspiracy side of the aspects, but also the mainstream aspects, because you want to be proved wrong. I mean, this is part of science, right? You want to be proved wrong. You want to see where any more information is coming from, and it's... And they get you on, and they get you on for like 5 seconds.
Well, yeah, and of course you're referring there to Triple J, which had me on. They had me in their studio, and I was given quite a detailed interview, which went for about 20 minutes.
So you went all the way into the ABC studios. You took your time out of your life, as an expert in a subject, and went into the actual studios.
And we went through a lot of questions, and I feel like I answered the questions really well. And they took a clip, less than a minute, I think, of me speaking.
It was at least 20 seconds.
Yeah, and you know, and they had sort of dance beats going while I was talking. You know,
right, totally inappropriate.
Yeah, yeah, disappointing. And of course, you know, we were subjected to a lesson about how we don't understand how toilets work.
Well, yeah. Let's just talk about this, right?
Yeah.
They basically had a psychoanalyst or some sort of psychologist. Is that what you?
They called him a conspiracy. Or do they call him a skeptic or a conspiracy debunker? I can't quite remember.
Someone who's an expert on people like us. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like we are some sort of deranged human that has some sort of problem.
Yeah, he studied the psychology of the wacko conspiracy types. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And he started going on about. And to give him credit, I mean, he said, you know, I don't like to put them down, and I think it's a really important place in the world for conspiracy theorists and all this sort of,
like in a zoo.
I mean, this sort of ridiculous nonsense that he would go on about. But he then went on to say, look, some of these people, you know, if you ask them how a toilet works, they wouldn't know how it flushes. And so they don't really know much about the world. And I was like, what?
That's quite a strange assertion on its face anyway, isn't it? I mean, you know, the mechanism of a toilet flushing. I mean, I'll just propose to you right now that I've got a reasonably good idea of how a cistern works. And you've got all that water up in there that sits up above the toilet. So you've got gravity.
In the reservoir. Yeah.
Yeah, in the reservoir. And, of course, it relies on gravity to basically flush the toilet. And you've got a little valve in there and you've got a button. And when you push that button, what actually happens is it opens a kind of a valve and all the water comes pouring down.
Yeah.
And it actually comes pouring down through a pipe. And it sloshes into the toilet bowl.
Yep.
And then the pressure of that water pushes everything in the toilet bowl, all the stuff you don't want, pushes it right down into the pipes, into the sewage system, which is where you want it to go.
And then you have a float, which when the toilet's slowly filling back up the reservoir, the float moves up with the water, and that float is attached to the valve, which closes the valve to let, you know, no more water down. I mean, it's...
I reckon I got a pretty good handle on it. And to be honest with you, I first investigated how toilets work when I was about 9 or 10 years old. I remember doing it because I was very curious, and I worked it out.
Even younger, I think. You know, you think, what's underneath this box? And you see the screw, and you unscrew it, and you have a look, and you think, oh, and you push the little float down, and it starts filling with more water. And I mean. But it's all ridiculous, and people will have to listen to the Triple J piece to understand what we're even going on about, and that'll be in the show notes, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yeah. But, well, I'm not going to bother playing it for you because it's just drivel, and it's really drivel. It's not even worth listening to. So
yeah, and it really, you know, and I hate to, I don't want to say, oh, it's a conspiracy, but they had these callers that would call in, and none of them got through. And I'm not saying, oh, the government, oh, they're shutting us out. They're not. They would have just laughed us off anyway. There obviously was some sort of problem. But, you know, straight away, the next day they get in and they say, oh, all the conspiracy theorists are now saying that was a conspiracy, that none of the court, like really making us sound like we're just absolutely paranoid. And then they went on, sorry, the last questions, just my mind's just racing because I was so furious at this.
Absolutely.
You know, knowing that you'd gone all the way in there and the good information you would have given them, and then this 20 seconds you got.
Yeah,
but the thing at the end, they said, well, why do you think they're wrong? These conspiracy theorists are wrong. And he's just like, well, it just couldn't happen. I mean, you couldn't get the bombs into the building. It's just implausible. It's implausible. And that was his scientific reason why, you know, we sit here with all our science, with 1,000, over 1,500 architects, engineers, physicists, scholars, firefighters, all saying, hey, we need a new investigation. And what is wrong with a new investigation, by the way, folks? What's wrong with asking for that? And they call us mad, yet all they have to do is go, oh, it's implausible. I mean, could you imagine if there was a murder? Could you imagine if there was a murder and the police just went, oh, the guy couldn't have gotten into this room because the door's still locked.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, that's the end of it then. That's the end of it.
Even though you've got a smoking gun and you've got the fingerprints and, you know, it couldn't have happened that way.
Yeah, the window's wide open, but, you know, you couldn't have climbed up all this way. It's impossible. You know, I mean, it's just this sort of nonsense, unscientific bull. And
you know,
they're so willing to take that in. They're so willing just to accept that. And not only that, they dedicate a week of total propaganda about 9/11.
Yeah, yeah.
A week of it.
Day after day.
Solid.
And they,
one day of these so-called the alternative views, and that was such an abomination. It was all of 10 minutes, or none of the calls got through. Herald got all cut off. And honestly, quite honestly, folks, I'm calling for the ABC to be shut down. I just think that they're an abomination. They call it our ABC. They say, our ABC. It's not our ABC. It's their ABC, and we pay for it.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better myself. One thing I think is interesting is that the debunkers these days, the best argument they can come up with for why it's not a conspiracy, or why it's not the conspiracy that, you know, why it's the official conspiracy rather than any other conspiracy, is that they say, look, you know, they could just never do this. They'd never get away with it. The whistleblowers would come forward. And this even happened when John was debating a guy. This is John Bursell, was debating a guy from the UK who claimed that his main area of expertise was physics. And despite asserting that on the show, that his area of expertise was physics.
Yeah, John wasn't an aircraft engineer. He was just a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, indeed.
So
that
was
interesting.
This other guy was a physicist, but John is just a conspiracy theorist.
But the best comeback that this physicist had was this argument that, it couldn't have happened that way because there would have been whistleblowers. I mean, you know, he couldn't even use his physics expertise to try and win the argument. So he had to revert to this sort of human psychology kind of thing, you know, people can't keep secrets type thing, right? That's what they're saying. People can't keep secrets. So yeah, someone would have blabbed. That's kind of the best argument that they've got. And it's just, you know, it's so weak. It's so lame. I mean, people who commit crimes don't generally admit it. You know, please continue. Yeah.
Sorry. No, and just to add to that, the other point that they always go to, so they that's one argument, because they can't beat us on the physics, because the physics doesn't add up. And if they were to be intellectually honest with the people, they would say, hey, look, the physics doesn't add up. But instead they go to this attack, to the attack you just mentioned, but they also go on the attack of, they wouldn't kill 3,000 of their own citizens.
No, of course, yes. Well, that's intimately, yeah, that's the next stage of that argument, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they and wouldn't. They.
Well, let's debunk that, right? So this is how I tackle that argument. Okay, so directly after 9/11, they said the air was safe to breathe. Yeah. Why did they say the air was safe to breathe when the air was obviously not?
And it's very toxic.
Very toxic. I mean, it doesn't take much to bring a meter out there and read toxicity levels in the air. It's not the biggest source of technology. I mean, you know, you can pick stuff up at the local Tandy to find, you know, to measure toxicity. And
people have been killed.
This was to open up the stock exchange again. This was to open up the financial district so that America wouldn't lose any more money, knowing that thousands of people are going back into the dust. And so they basically killed all those people, because all those people are dying now, folks.
Exactly.
And all those people are dying. And if they're not dead yet, they're on 1,000 pills.
So they knew.
Oxygen machines.
They knew that they were consigning people to, you know, severe health effects and death. And therefore, yes, they will willingly send people to their death. We'll get right back into that after the break. Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back. Now, Josh, you were saying just earlier there that, you know, you're giving a great example of how government authorities would willingly do things that would lead people into at least severe health effects, or, you know, death from the long-term effects, which will lead to cancer of exposure to those dust particles, cancer and other lung ailments. But, you know, there are many more examples from, you know, the history of false flag terrorism. During the post-war period, there were terrorist groups that were being funded and mobilized by the CIA in Western Europe. And this was part of what they called Operation Gladio. And it was originally done as a bulwark against the Soviet Empire. They actually put fascists in secret cells across Europe to as the US military was actually, you know, taking over Western Europe. They instead of arresting all the Nazis, they actually let some of them go, but they monitored them and they actually told them to go underground, and they actually used them as kind of agents.
No. Now, totally.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and they did this in Italy as well. And later on, I mean, and later on, then it got even more twisted, because instead of just using them as agents to call on in the event of, say, some Cold War crisis, they actually started getting them to stage terror events that they could then blame on communist elements, because they wanted to keep up the fear. You know, the fear of the Russians, the fear of the Soviet regime was really important to maintain that. So they actually started staging events, and yeah. some of these terrorist attacks that were conducted in Germany, the Baader-Meinhof group, the Red Brigades in Italy, there were CIA handlers setting up a lot of that stuff, and they killed a lot of people. I mean, it really happened, folks. I really wish it wasn't so, I tell you. Oh, I mean, absolutely. I really wish it wasn't so. It makes it sends chills up my spine even talking about it to you.
Yeah, and if you look through history, I mean, you just have to type into Google examples of false flag terrorism or false flag attacks. You know, you've got Operation Himmler, where they faked their own people, they faked their own attacks on people and resources, the Nazis, to which they could blame the Poles on, and that would justify them invading Poland.
Yeah,
you have this multiple times, and people go, "Oh, yeah, but that was the Nazis; they were evil." Well, they were just people.
Yeah. Yeah,
they were just another government.
Yeah, it was a different time. You know, they were pretty wicked, and they became more and more evil as time went by. But so
I'm not taking away anything from their wickedness. Yeah, absolutely not. I'm just saying that there's no that it just because time's passed doesn't mean that governments are now all angelic.
Yeah, look, it's true, and you know, intellectuals and writers have understood this for a long time. I mean, I can cite you two novels from the 20th century by some of the greatest writers, the greatest novelists of the 20th century, one of them being Graham Greene, the other one being Joseph Conrad. Graham Greene wrote a novel called The Quiet American, which was actually made into a movie with Michael Caine. And you know, that movie is a great textbook case of false flag terrorism. That's what it's actually about. It's about how the Americans got into Vietnam and had to have a pretext to maintain their presence by staging terror attacks that they could then blame on the communists from the north, so that they could prop up the regime, the puppet regime that they were setting up in South Vietnam. I mean, Graham Greene, a writer, understood that 50 years ago. Okay, that was the way they operated. Well, I mean, why are people so ignorant now? I don't understand it. Like, why is the average person so ignorant of that when people, when writers and intellectuals 50 years ago were totally aware of it?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, and the dangerous part of it is, you know, I mean, this is a quote from Paul Craig Roberts. Ask yourself, would a government that has lied us into two wars and is working to lie us into an attack in Iran shrink from staging terrorist attacks in order to remove opposition to its agenda? And that is the reason why we on this radio show keep bringing up the importance of exposing the lies of 9/11.
Yeah. We have to try to keep up the barrage of truth, just as the other side keeps up the barrage of lies. And it's a tough call because the barrage of lies has been continuous, and it's an onslaught day after day after day in the media, and it's a brainwashing exercise. And I really want to actually address this concept of how people are brainwashed with by referring to another BBC documentary that's just been released, and it's the one that we talked about a while ago, Josh. It's called the Conspiracy Road Trip. The 9/11 Conspiracy Road Trip. And I've actually got an audio clip here of a young lady who was on that show. It was actually paid for by the BBC, but it was done by a small independent television film organization. And what they did is they took some young people, and emphasis was they were young. They had to be like well under 30, you know, that they were, and this is important because they wanted to mold these people's thinking, but they wanted people who consider themselves to be 9/11 truthers to go over to the US, and then they exposed them to an 8-day kind of re-education. It really is a classic case of intense pressure re-education to make these people change the way they think. And, It's quite chilling, actually, the implications that they're actually doing this, and that they were taking these people as guinea pigs and doing this to them. And I want to play you a clip from Emily, who was one of the people who was on that trip. And it appears from the way she talks about it that it actually did change the way she thinks. And it's a little disturbing because, you see, people who are younger are much more impressionable. Like, in terms of me changing the way I think, right, you'd actually just have to give me some facts, and I would look at those facts. And to be honest with you, I would be happy if someone could show me the facts that prove how Building 7 came down, right, that wasn't explosive. I would actually just be happy, right?
Yeah, well, we're not out there going,
yeah,
right, hang this person, hang that person, yeah, this is the facts, this is what's happened. No, we're going, we need an investigation. That's all we're ever asking for.
And what I know in regard to Building 7, I know all the facts that the government has produced, that there can't be any other facts because we know about them. So what did this BBC thing do? It looks like it was more just psychological pressure. It's like they put them in little rooms and they just barraged them, you know, and made them feel uncomfortable. And it went on for victims. Day after day after day. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, with firefighters. And stuff that were there. And the thing is, there's so many firefighters that were there who agree with us, but no, you can't use them.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you can always find a subset of people who'll say what you want. There's millions of people on this earth, and you'll even find people who'll do it for little or no money, but offer people a little money and wow, you'll get a lot more response. So I actually want to just play a little clip from that I've got lined up here. And just feel free to interrupt it if you want to mention anything here, Josh. Sure. So this is actually from a British podcast, Mr. Brit, talking to Emily, who went on the Conspiracy Road Trip.
I mean, yeah, just tell us about the initial kind of days of the shoot, basically. I mean, tell us about some of the other people who were involved and also the kind of crew members that were there and just the vibe that you got from the production crew, basically.
Okay, well, everyone who was on the show was really nice. I liked everyone, including Charlie. Charlotte and Rodney, they were two people who I've stayed like in most contact with since the show. And they're just really nice, genuine people who really stuck to their guns the whole way through and didn't cave in. No matter who they were presented with, they just kept on the same path, which I tried to do. There was a point, it's difficult to explain because if you weren't there, I don't think that you'd be able to understand how much pressure it was to be there and to speak to the people that we spoke to and to try and argue your point consistently every single day for 8 days. Mm-hmm. There was a point like halfway through where I felt like I was going for a mental breakdown. Okay. Because I mean, it was stressful. It was long days filming.
I'll just pause it there. Josh, do you get the impression here that this girl has really been subjected to intense psychological conditioning And rather than sort of trying to convince her of stuff with facts, they've actually tried to pressure her using psychological techniques and emotional effects.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is why they get a young person. This is why they don't get an expert, like an expert in physics, a PhD, a professional architect or engineer. They get a young girl who just thinks, well, this sounds dodgy. I don't believe, I've watched Loose Change and I don't believe the official story.
Exactly. Look, we might continue with a bit of that. I'm just going to break now. But it's quite an interesting recording, that one. Got a track here by Aretha Franklin, 1968. Truth News Radio. I'm here tonight with Josh Jackson, and we're sort of ploughing through the flotsam and jetsam of 9/11 as we head to another anniversary year, the 10th anniversary of this event, which kind of was kind of a seminal event for a lot of us, changed the way we think. And of course, a lot of that's been on the news, you know, how 9/11 changed you. But, you know, 9/11 change different people in different ways. Look, I just want to continue with that clip, if you don't mind, Josh, and please feel free to interrupt. But this is quite an interesting, I think, exploration of, well, the psychological effects versus, see, we spend a lot of time talking about facts and information, right? And we try to convince people through information. But the way people typically are influenced in society is actually psychologically. And it appears that what the BBC has done in this show is they've actually used this technique. Now, I don't know whether it's an experiment or whether they're just doing it as just some one-off bit of entertainment, but it's quite chilling when you think about it, because if they can do this, on a small group of people, they can do it on a larger group, they can do it to society, and in fact, that's what they are doing. And so when I hear this young woman, Emily, who in the beginning of the interview, she's saying that, you know, she was very strong in her 9/11 truth, you know, beliefs, as it were. And after she came back from the trip, she's actually been kind of weakened in her beliefs. Now, of course, I don't I don't ever describe myself in terms of my beliefs about 9/11 because I'm actually not interested in beliefs. I'm interested in facts and getting to the truth. And however, a lot of people are at that level. A lot of people are at the level of either believing one thing or believing another thing. They've either got to believe the official story or they've got to believe the 9/11 truth version. Are you there, Josh? Seems like we've lost Josh Jackson.
I'm back. I'm back.
Did you catch any of what I just said?
I did. Excellent. And you're right. You're spot on.
Thank you. Look, let's just continue with a little bit more of this clip.
And obviously in the middle of summer in America, and it was extremely hot, and there was, you know, I was on a bus with people who I've never met before in my entire life, mm-hmm. And there were bound to be arguments, and sometimes we'd have like little spats, and it was nothing serious, and everyone made up afterwards. It's just sort of the atmosphere that was created, well, not like created nefariously, was there for whatever reason, it sort of built tension. So it was very difficult, and it did sort of, it made me think to myself, like on the third or fourth day, I thought, hold on a minute, what if, you know, 9/11 was exactly as they told us? And I think, I know Charlie had like a point of really questioning what he believed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just want to comment on that. She said, what if 9/11 was exactly as they told us, right?
Yeah.
Now, this is really, really interesting because, you see, the problem with 9/11 is they never really told us anything much. They just told us little scraps of information.
Well, but they never explained. What she's referring to is that 19 hijackers with box cutters.
Oh, I know exactly what she's talking about. But the point I'm making is that they never, and the reason why I became a truther is they never explained.
Yeah.
Things. See, she's basically falling into the pattern, the thought pattern of, yes, they, you know, the official story is correct, right? But what is the official story? It doesn't actually explain most of what happened. It doesn't explain how those hijackers got control of the airplane. It doesn't explain how those buildings could have come down. Mm-hmm. It skips over a whole lot of facts. It doesn't explain how the pilots could have flown those planes so expertly. You know, it doesn't explain anything, really. It doesn't explain why the military couldn't respond in time when we had, you know, planes going off course and, you know, they had plenty of time to catch up with the plane that went into the Pentagon. You know,
yeah, I mean, where I lead to, because there's just so many questions, right? There's so many questions. And the thing is, a lot of them can be answered with, well, we'll never know. Well, they're just incompetent. Well, they can come up with a whole heap of – what I always go back to is what the architects and engineers have stated, and that is we have found nanothermite particles in the dust samples from numerous dust samples sent from different peoples with chain of ownership linked to it. Why is this here? Why is this here? Answer it. That's all we want. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm nothing of the sort. I just want to know, why is this here? Then, if you can give me that answer, well, we'll talk.
Well, on the previous BBC show that I listened to about a week ago, they actually consulted some of their experts on that particular topic. And the experts that they had said, well, yeah, there is a scientific paper. It was written, you know, by Niels Harrit, and we haven't challenged it. And the BBC asks them why, and they say, well, we can't be bothered, essentially. And their response is that it's of no interest, and it's of no importance. So, you know, there's always a kind of a comeback that someone can think of to sound like, you know, it's meaningful. You know what I mean? But yeah, just getting back to the point I was making before, which is that the way Emily's talking there, right, is she's been, I don't know, she's being reconditioned into thinking that the official version of how 9/11 played out actually has more substance to it. And the reason why we're truthers is that the official version doesn't have substance to it. And it's far more than just the buildings coming down, Josh. You know, as you know, there are so many other parts of it that don't add up. And, you know, even if we didn't focus on the buildings, there are all these other things that are equally significant, you know, and there's just so much of it that we actually have to, you know, yes, you know, I would like to be convinced, right? But I'm not going to be convinced just by someone pressuring me by, you know, putting me in a group of people and making me feel guilty or stupid. I have to be pressured by facts. I have to be shown information. And they haven't shown me that information. They haven't explained how Building 7 could come down. They haven't explained it. You know what I mean? Now, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know. I don't know that it was nanothermite. I mean, that's the latest research that they've done. I would never go to someone and say, hey, I know there was nanothermite in that dust, because I don't know that. That's very technical. That's very very refined, detailed technical information that I could never be the judge of.
This is the scientific side of the investigation. And of course, it's going to be technical. Like,
my point is, which I just need to really, really reinforce, is that the evidence about the building's collapse does not rely on nanothermite. It really doesn't. Like it could be that they've got it wrong. And I would never want to be tied to the nanothermite theory and then go down with it if it turns out that they got that wrong. It's quite possible they did get it wrong, right? So do you understand my point?
Yeah.
Is that what we're actually looking at with the towers is, how do you explain free fall collapse? And that's far more important, actually, than the nanothermite. I know the nanothermite is very important, but actually what's important at a higher level is understanding that the free fall collapse is actually impossible.
Yeah, and if you take that one step further, the real important message here, if you can talk to someone and they don't even believe that 9/11 was something more than the official story read, if they believe the full official story, then you have to ask these people, do you think that government will do evil stuff to their own people? Do you believe in false flag terror attacks? Do you believe that they have happened? Because that is the real issue here behind it.
Yeah, and that's where we actually do have to get into a more complex argument. And that's where we do have to look at history. We do have to look at geopolitics. And that's also a very important part of what the researchers in the 9/11 truth movement have done. And I'm a little bit concerned when people just say, we're only ever going to talk about the buildings coming down. We're only going to talk about nanothermite. I think that's actually a bit of a dangerous approach, because you can be so tied into a corner with it, right, that you lose the ability to explain the general context. B, you might just be wrong about that one point. And then you're going to look a bit silly.
I'm willing to be wrong about it, but the fact of the matter is that this is the strongest forensic evidence we have.
But you and I, Josh, we're not experts, so we can't ourselves vouch for that. You know, like, we can get Richard Gage on, we can get a scientist on, and that person can say, yes, I'm an expert. But then that expert can be challenged by another expert, and, you know, they can argue it out. One of them might be right, one of them might be wrong. But what we can talk about, we can talk about geopolitics. Right, we can be experts in geopolitics. We've spent enough time looking at it. I've never looked through an electron microscope, right? So I've got absolutely zero expertise in that area. Whereas I can actually talk from, you know, having studied some historical facts about the history of, you know, militarism, and I can also look at the way in which 9/11 appears to have been the fulfillment of a plan. And those things are extremely important, because those are things that we can all understand. You don't have to have that highly trained expert knowledge to understand it. So just this danger of just relying on experts. So just going to go to another break and we'll continue. ¶¶
propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back. And look, just finishing off that point I was making there about experts and the difference between sort of common sense, observable facts and detailed expert knowledge. I actually had a chance to talk to Niels Harrit, Professor Niels Harrit, when he was in Sydney about this very question. And he actually said, you don't need to talk about nanothermite. He said, two planes, three buildings, right? And he's the expert, right? And yeah. and he actually says that's a stronger argument than focusing on the nanothermite, because it is the basis on which they actually conducted their research. They already knew there had to be some other source of energy that brought those buildings down, because of those facts. But those simple facts are something that everyone can understand. Everyone can understand two planes, three buildings. Okay. Yeah. How do you bring down three buildings with two planes? Even if you think maybe the two planes did bring down the Twin Towers, how did the other one come down? And there's a bunch of other common sense things too about, you know, how did those hijackers get control of those planes? You know, I mean, the pilots are in there. They've got security systems. There's a pilot and a co-pilot. They've got transponder codes they can type in straight away if the plane's been hijacked. How did the hijackers get in there and kill both the pilot and the co-pilot and stop them from sending off the hijack codes? Because the government is stuck with that story. That's what they say happened. They say there were no hijack codes sent out, so no one officially knew the planes had been hijacked. That's just it's implausible to a ridiculous level. It's ridiculously improbable that they could have done that. And then how did they fly the planes? They didn't have air traffic control to help them. So they just had to get in the cockpit and they're up in the sky. They're way up, you know, above the clouds. They're at 30,000 feet and they've got to turn the plane around and aim to fly into this building. I mean, they're not even trained pilots. It's so implausible. I mean, let's not call it impossible. Let's just call it so implausible. And then there's no proof that they did that. There's no evidence. It never went to court. They never explained how that could have happened. Like, they never even tried to explain how it was possible for these amateur pilots to do this. They're just begging our stupidity. They're just relying on our stupidity not to have questions about that, and the dumbed down media not to ever ask questions about that. Because as soon as you start asking questions, it just unravels. The whole thing unravels. Like, it's actually a very simple thing to debunk. You know, let's call it debunking 9/11. We're debunking the official conspiracy nonsense of 9/11.
I know. And it is true what you say. It is true what you say.
The whole thing is just a giant concocted load of rubbish. Like, it's an insult to our intelligence, the way that they're telling us this happened. Like, anyone can see through it.
No, but you don't know how a toilet works, Harold. that's the real issue.
Look, in this last segment, let me just play a little bit of the interview with John Bursell on Sydney's 2GB, because that was actually quite a bit more a respectable interview, although it still had some, you know, it had some silly moments in it. But let's just play a bit of that, and if you want to comment, just let me know.
Yeah.
Well, we are coming up to the 10th anniversary of the September 11 terrorist attacks, a day that changed the world. It's amazing to think that a decade has passed. And in that time, so many conspiracy theories have flourished. In fact, whenever I mention September 11 on the radio, I always get emails and calls from people saying it was a setup, it was the US government, it was not Al-Qaeda, it was not Osama bin Laden. There are a range of conspiracy theories. So I thought we would actually have a bit of a chat to two different people. On the line, I have a conspiracy theorist, John Bursell, from the 9/11 Truth Movement. He's based in Australia.
He's not an aircraft
John,
engineer.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
Let's just point out, yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, conspiracy theorist. Yeah, he's an aircraft engineer. He's actually an expert, okay? That's bad, I have to say. That is really bad. I feel sorry for John that, you know, he was presented in that way. And of course, he repeats this conspiracy theorist phrase over and over again in the interview.
Yeah, that's what he is. He is this meme.
Yeah, absolutely.
G'day, how have you been?
Good. And I also have on the line from the UK, Mike King. He is a conspiracy theory debunker and an expert in physics. Mike, good afternoon to you.
Okay, so the other guy is a conspiracy theorist debunker and an expert in physics. But yeah. John is just a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
Okay, unfair. Unfair, Ben, okay?
When we say this, and I just want to get this straight.
Yeah.
We're not saying they work for the government and they're all in on it and he's all in it. No, it's just that mainstream media, there's this psychology that even if the presenter doesn't believe the official story, they're made to feel like they can't go along with the conspiracy theory. Otherwise, they A, just look like nut jobs and get fired, or B, just aren't towing the company line, or C, they just don't care and it's just entertainment to them.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I mean, people like this, they wouldn't even be able to do the show if they came across as being into the conspiracies. You know what I mean? They actually have to say, that they're standing back from it. But sometimes they go to this length of actually really making it look ridiculous, which is what Triple J did. They went to such a ridiculous length.
Yeah.
Ben Fordham isn't quite as bad, but he's getting there. He's getting there. So we'll just keep playing.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay. Thank you both for having a discussion with us. And look, let me start with not New York City, because one of the conspiracy videos that's been put together it surrounds the Pentagon. That's the plane that flew into the Pentagon in Washington. John, let me go to you first of all. You are a conspiracy theorist in relation to 9/11, but you describe yourself as a conservative in regards to your conspiracy. Tell me, what do you make of the Pentagon conspiracy?
Okay, I reject the term conspiracy theorist in my case, but I understand I can be seen as that, but that's fine.
Sure.
Around the Pentagon, we have many questions about the Pentagon, about the air defences on that day. The Flight 77 that approached the Pentagon, a 757, was known about for approximately 50 minutes, and there was actually testimony by Norman Mineta given to the 9/11 Commission, which was withheld, that said clearly that Dick Cheney was aware the plane was approaching the building from 50 miles out and did nothing to resolve the problem. So there's many questions around the Pentagon. There's also questions why, we see or we see that many people have created conspiracy theories about, and I know exactly what you're talking about. When you look at the physical evidence, and especially as an aircraft engineer qualified on similar aircraft, Boeing aircraft, we find that it was a very high-speed crash and consequently only the largest and heaviest parts of the aircraft broke through the recently armoured, that part of the Pentagon. That was
One of the main things people point out is, look, the strike zone where the plane allegedly hit the building, you don't see any area where the wings hit the building.
Well, if you look closely enough and you look at the early photos, you'll find that there's literally 1,000 pieces of aluminium confetti all over the lawn, as we would expect with such a high-speed collision. Mm. A high-speed collision of that caliber is actually probably 7 or 8 times the kinetic energy that we would see from a normal aircraft crash on landing.
Okay, so do you believe that a plane flew into the Pentagon?
I personally do believe a plane flew into the Pentagon. We have the digital photo recorder that has been properly cracked recently by scientists.
All right, let me go to Mike King.
Can I just clarify also for our listeners what I think about the Pentagon? And Josh, you're welcome to chip in there as well. I personally don't know. I don't know that Flight 77 hit the Pentagon, but I don't know that it didn't either. And one of the reasons why I say I don't know that it did is that, well, they didn't show us the footage. There were a lot of cameras on the building there. And they only ever released those 4 frames from the 1 security camera, which just show this blurry shape. You can't make it out. And, you can't actually see any plane wreckage in there. And, it would be stupid for me to say that I know that a plane hit the building. But at the same time, I don't know that it didn't either. Okay, so from the point of view of that being an important element in questioning the government's version of events, it's just not. It's not a useful, actually, subject to talk about. But there are so many other subjects in relation to what happened at the Pentagon that are worth talking about, like how did little Honey Hunter, who was 4'10", how did he overwhelm the pilot, who was a big guy, who was an extra military guy, just forget the name right now, but he was actually uh, He actually had been in the Pentagon not before that, helping them with drills on terrorist-type events, the pilot of the actual plane. You know, so how did Honey Hunjoe overwhelm the pilot, and how did he fly that plane so well into the building? And why wasn't the plane intercepted at all? But, you know, the question of, you know, did the plane hit the building or did it not? I don't know. Yeah, it's just I would like to know, and I would really, you know, would like to see that footage that could resolve that. And it's disturbing that they don't release that footage. What do you think, Josh? What's your take on that?
I've always wondered why don't they release all the footage of all the cameras? What have they got to hide? Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
You know, I just, why not? I mean, there's really nothing more that can, you know, if there's nothing to hide, well, why don't you just show it?
Yeah.
What's there? Why are you keeping it all?
Yeah. Yeah. And you see, like, you know, we're not trying to form some elaborate conspiracy theory about this. You know, I've got better things to do with my time, honestly. Like, I don't need to come up with some complicated alternate scenario. And I know some people have done that, you know. And there's been guys that have, and we've had them on the show, you know, that have said the plane flew over the building and then they blew something up. And, you know, Well, it all sounds a bit implausible too, doesn't it? The whole thing sounds implausable, you know. If that's the way they want to spend their time thinking up other implausible scenarios and then saying, well, you know, somebody knocked down the light poles to make it look as if a plane hit the building, you know, good on them, but I think it's a total waste of time. Okay.
Yeah.
But let's continue with John Bursell. Actually, he's just about to cut to Mike King, who's actually now going to respond to that Pentagon question.
Let me bring Mike King in just on this one. Mike, an easy one for you, because as you hear from John there, he's not doubting this story at all. But I'll tell you what, there are a lot of people out there, Mike King, who believe that there was no plane that flew into the Pentagon.
Yes, indeed, but I think the evidence slowly points to the fact that there probably was a plane. It is very difficult to marshal evidence of this nature for a one-off event. In science, to do something scientifically, you have to repeat something.
I'm just going to have to leave it there, folks. We've actually run out of time. You'll be able to get that audio off Truth News, and we'll put a link to it on the show notes.
Folks, one thing I'd like to quickly add, you know, if you want to Skype into the Truth News, we've got a voicemail there, and if you'd like to leave us a message, we can play it on the radio, play it on the show. And also, you know, if you've got something to say, say it on our Facebook page or comment on the on a blog at truthnews.com.au, and we'll read it out. You know, it's your show just as much as ours, and not like the ABC, which is just theirs.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we don't like them. Well, thanks for tonight.
Yeah, cheers.
And, by the time you're getting this podcast, 9/11 may have come and gone, but we'll be here, you know. We will not, we won't give up.
No.
So, on this anniversary eve of September 11, well, actually one day before the anniversary eve, we bid you a good night.